Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is the Poetry in Motion podcast on the Blood Red Channel with Neil Fitzmaurice, bringing you all the big news and even bigger views on Liverpool FC.
Welcome to another episode of Poetry in Motion. If you're listening online, thank you once again for choosing one of the Blood Red podcasts. Really appreciate your support. If you're walking the dogs across a beach, or you're walking across a field, or you're having a lovely fresh air day and filling your lungs, and you've got your owl hair earphones on and you're listening to our podcast, much appreciated your company as always. We're going to talk everything at Liverpool Football Club. Something happened the weekend, can't remember what it was, but no doubt we'll chat about it. I'm joined by Stephen Killen. How are you, Stephen?
All good. Trying to sort of wind down after a quiet week. Or it's not really a quiet week at all, has it? Never is with Liverpool these days.
No, it isn't. So you've got somewhere a lovely little background pegging going on there. What have you done there?
No, this is the makeshift office. This is all Mark's concoction.
I like it, mate. I like it a lot. It looks like you're waiting to get a passport photo. Ed Kay's here as well. How are you, Ed?
Yeah, all good, mate. Like you say, not been much to talk about this week. I don't think I'll be getting much of that fresh air you're talking about. Though. It's a bit miserable in Leeds today.
Oh, no. Well, I don't know what it's like here. I'm in Manchester at the moment, but I don't know what it's like. I haven't looked out the window yet. I didn't. All right, listen, let's talk about the weekend. Let's brush over it. It's been talked about to death. No doubt you've all done podcasts about this. Everyone listening will have heard every possible angle, if we can use that, to discuss what happened. We'll just put it in a nutshell, shall we? A couple of seasons ago, Diaz, was it, or Laporte, handles a ball in the box against Everton. A blatant handball that wasn't VAR checked, or was, but was allowed. Man City go on to win the league by 1 point. Such is the anger, I think, and rightly so, with what's happened at the weekend against Tottenham. Two players sent off. The Curtis Jones incident, you can argue tackles like that can be sent off. My problem with it, Ed, wasn't so much that the referee looked at it, but the referee ran up to a screen. This is the first bit of VAR nonsense. Ran up to a TV screen that was already freeze-framed on the point of contact between Jordan Henderson's foot going into the other player's leg. Long since thought this was ridiculous, mate. Surely VAR should be offering up exactly the same speed with the entire move, so the referee gets to see what he got to see, and not a chance to look into a completely different matter.
Yeah, well, I think this is why Liverpool appealed that Curtis Jones red card in the first place, because I think when you look at it. It's sort of been 50-50, the opinion online. Most Liverpool fans don't think it's a red card. I certainly don't think it was a red card. You know, his foot, he clearly gets the ball and his foot slips over the top of the ball and then comes into contact with Bissouma. But I think everyone's main bone to pick with that was what Simon Hooper was shown when he went up to the screen. Obviously, it's just fixed on that angle where it freeze frame, where it looks like a leg breaker for about 10 seconds. And I mean, I've said this on other podcasts already, but Once he gets sent to the screen, I don't think it matters what they show him. We all know what the result's going to be. We know Curtis Jones is going to get a red card as soon as he gets sent to that screen. So almost what he's shown is almost irrelevant. But the fact we've all seen it, you know, he's just frozen on that freeze frame. And again, I think this is why Liverpool appealed it, because if you look at the rules of how VAR is supposed to be used, they're not supposed to just be showing a freeze frame as the first thing he sees. They're recommended to be viewing these incidents back at full speed. And if you watch it at full speed, like I just don't see how you can see it as anything other than a genuine attempt to win the ball. Football is not a non-contact sport. Injuries are going to happen. It's unfortunate. It's part of the game. You look at what Jordan Pickford did to Van Dijk however long ago. Why'd VAR not intervene on that? Like, seriously, if that's the road we're going down, and I hesitate to use the phrase, oh, they're ruining football, because that does sound a bit reactionary sometimes. But if Curtis Jones, in the 20th minute of, probably Liverpool's biggest game of the season so far, away at Spurs, they can go top of the league with a win. If he's not allowed to, like, make an attempt to win that ball there, then what are we doing? What is the point of paying your money and watching Liverpool, going to the matches, tuning in on TV, paying however much we do to not even see every Premier League game, if after 20 minutes in the biggest game of the season that we've all looked forward to all week, the game's essentially been ruined by another refereeing decision? It's ridiculous at this point. I mean, Simon Hooper, for me, he got the decision right in real time with a yellow card. That was all it needed to be. And yeah, just being shown that freeze frame on the computer, I think it's rightly riled a lot of people up, because there's no other decision he can make when he sees that as the first thing he goes over on the screen for about 10 seconds, is there?
No, and Stephen, the thing is, I mean, what Ed's just said is correct, in my opinion. It's not even about that, because this has happened lots of times. It happened last season, I think, with Harry Kane going right through Andy Robertson. VAR didn't seem to want to interfere in that. It was a terrible challenge. So, and I just don't want this to be a rant, an anti-Liverpool rant. It's not, because it's happening all over the place. It's happening with all kinds of teams. All kinds of fans can pull up video stock footage of terrible decisions being made. But what's wrong with a referee? Because all they're doing is admitting their part of the mistake if they give the decision. What's wrong with a referee going up to the screen and saying, forget that, play it at full speed so I can verify the decision I made was right? Because the yellow card at that moment is absolutely bang on right. We've seen countless games, derbies in the past, Man United games, big, big games, where they've been absolutely ruined with 15 minutes in, 15, 20 minutes in, whatever, with a red card that just completely dissolves the game, ruins the game for everyone paying. When are they going to learn that people are paying a lot of money to watch these football matches and not paying a lot of money to watch these football matches clipped after 15 minutes and sent in a completely different direction? Not wrong with any ref. And I think a ref with the guts to do it, that we could hear going, don't play it at slow motion, don't play it at an angle, play it at the angle that, and the speed that I would have seen it to make my first decision, and then overruling and standing by his first decision. Because VAR is like this dark cloud, isn't it, that comes over the ref's shoulders and says, no, you look at the way we want to show you it, and then you'll realise you're wrong. It doesn't work that way. A referee should be able to make that decision, Stephen, shouldn't he?
Yeah, and it feels like, since the technologies came in particular, it almost feels like they've got reliance on this safety net, where they can be, right, I've got that decision wrong, what are you saying in Stockley Park? And I think that's maybe where it's fallen far, because they're just relying on each other. And like, I think when Mike Dean came out and said he didn't want to send his mate to the monitor, I just think the palliness and how everyone's mates behind the scenes, I think it sort of goes against the grain of the game. And I think with Liverpool or with football in general, I think it's just reached a juncture where it's a crisis point for VAR, because I think there's something like 14 apologies have been issued. And now Klopp's asked for a replay. It's set a precedent and every team's going, wait, hang on, I've had a wrongdoing with VAR, so maybe we should have one too. And I think it's completely ruining the enjoyment. And as Ed said, the fans are paying hard earned money, especially in a time of difficulty for everyone in the UK. I just think it's getting to a point now where it's becoming ridiculous. And I think with the VAR in particular, I feel like when people mention these changes, nothing seems to get done. Like we've said it time and time again, where it's going in slow motion, play it in real time, or you don't play it in real time. And then you say, stop, don't put it on a still image when you first come over, and they still put it on the still image. It doesn't seem like, it seems like a lot of PGMOL statements are coming through, and they're just going like that, throw it out, and then let's all go to the pub and let's just sit down and enjoy our steak dinner. But it's getting to the point now where it's becoming a farce. And I think just on the Jones situation, I think if you watch football and if you see Jones as a player, he's the type of player who does make that chop action when he gets the ball start. It's a typical Jones movement. Maybe if Bissouma wasn't a few yards away, he would have just went over the ball, chopped it and regained possession. But he's obviously went over the ball and Bissouma's calf's right there and it's just caught him. But I think common sense in the game's been lost, and I think we speak about common sense quite a lot. It just doesn't seem to apply in football these days.
No, it doesn't. And it, you know, people are saying now you get the anger, first of all, and then you get the online things of like, all right, let it go now, forget about it. You're not going to get a match replayed. I mean, match replayed is a very difficult thing to organise and a very difficult thing to do with respect to the fixture list and stuff. But, and we'll just say this on it, really, and we'll move on because we don't know really. You could talk about this for the entire hour. And people already have. That's a problem. Ed, there has to be an end to this this self-regulating, though, doesn't there? Because there has to be an independent body, surely, that's brought in to look at the mistakes that these are making and saying, well, you can't just issue a statement saying, because it was just a torrent of lies, wasn't it? First of all, the technology wasn't available to give to Sky. Of course, there have been plenty of comments saying that Sky was in bed with them, really, and just from professional and ex-professional players. Then Sky helped out the PGWOL, whatever they're called, and backed them up and said we didn't have the stuff available. And then we clearly did, didn't we? Because we've heard the audio. So there has to be an independent body that comes across here. Otherwise, they just keep doing it and then releasing 48 hours later apologies.
Poetry in Motion on the Blood Red Channel.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I mean, they just don't help themselves at all. That Sean Bradbury made this point on the Blood Red Pod earlier this week. The whole thing just needs, they need to take a look at the entire culture of the way that they're working, especially in that VAR hub. And the whole thing just needs to be completely stripped back and professionalized, because it's all too pally-pally. It's too matey. You've got about seven different people talking in that VAR hub. Everyone's talking over each other. There's only one of them who's actually talking sense, who is this Ollie something. I can't remember his last name for the life of me, but he's the one calling in saying to delay the game. You've then got Michael Oliver thinking he's being spoken to because people are saying Ollie is saying to delay the game, which is, they shouldn't be calling each other by their nicknames. There's too much money riding on the decisions that these people are making. There's too many people who are too invested in what happens in this game. You know, we're all invested. People have spent too much money to go there. People have spent too much money to watch it on the TV. This is the best league in the world. The whole thing just needs to be so much more professional. How the clubs voted against this semi-automated offside that we've seen in the Champions League and all across Europe, I've got absolutely no idea. And the fact that they've voted against that does make me sympathise with them a lot less, because it's like you know these officials are rubbish. They've shown you it for years. They've shown it game in, game out. There's mistakes every week with VAR now. You know they're inept, so why would you not vote for this semi-automated system that you know will work, you know will probably work quicker? All right, maybe there'll be a technological failing at some point, but you'd hope at that point somebody will cotton on quickly and go, hang on, stop the game, which is what should happen in this case. You know, somebody in that VAR room has got to just take some initiative. Like, everyone's saying, like, oh, I couldn't do anything. And everyone's sympathising with them. Like, we're not children. Like, you shouldn't need to be told that that should have been brought back within 30 seconds. All this nonsense about he didn't know, the on-field referee didn't know until half-time. And it's like, well, A, I don't believe that for a second. And B, even if he did find out at halftime, does that not then influence his refereeing for the entire second half of the game? You know, quite often referees will look to even it up if they know they've made a howler of a decision earlier on in the first half. all right, maybe not so much now in the VAR era, but certainly before VAR, that was definitely a thing. And instead, he's sent Diogo Jota off for two yellow cards, neither of which was debatably even a foul. I mean, the second one was stupid from him, but I mean, the first one, he doesn't even touch him. And then the guy who's on the floor signals for a card, doesn't get booked for that. I think he was already on a yellow as well. That rule's gone out the window. There's no consistency. And like I said, the whole thing just needs to be completely stripped back and professionalised, because at present, it's just not good enough. And like we say, there's an apology pretty much every week now.
Well, as Ed says, Stephen, this pre-season or vote by managers and clubs to decide whether to take on the semi-automated VAR. It would be interesting, Stephen, wouldn't it, to find out what the ratios of clubs that voted against that? Because you can't imagine any of the big clubs would vote against that. Surely they'd want a clinical. Would it be the smaller clubs? It'd be interesting to know. And if the likes of Liverpool got back and it said that they'd voted against having it, then yeah, you're right, Ed. You know, you kind of lose a bit of sympathy for Liverpool and teams who voted against trying to take this system out of the hands of people who clearly don't know how to use it. I mean, the audio is of the whole transcript is ridiculous, isn't it? It sounds like Dave shouting, Barry shouting, Gary shouting, Steve shouting. Is that you, Steve? No, it's Dave. Where's Barry? It's just unbelievable, isn't it? And hard to believe that something can happen in modern day football like that. One thing that people haven't mentioned is the amount of gambling. Not that I'm an advocate of gambling. I can't stand gambling, but the amount of people who put a bet on and put certain kinds of bets on nowadays. I had one about a guy who had Diaz to score, Son to score, several bookings, and his odds were 950 to 1. He put a tenner on it. He was looking at $9,500. There's probably bigger accumulatives than that. There's probably bigger ratios than that, and those people are losing money. You know, there must have been an absolute fortune lost with the amount of bets that Diaz was a part of. So it's just an absolute shit show, isn't it? Let's be honest with you. And the quicker they get this thing sorted out, the better, and taking it out of the hands. But I think for this, Stephen, there has to be some more accountability, doesn't there?
Yeah, no, I think more and more we're getting more people calling it out and calling for referees to do these post-match interviews. It'll be interesting to see what they say, because like, it gets to a point where you're wondering, it's just you go behind the screen and then that's it, and then it's like throwing a grenade into whatever, isn't it? Just letting everyone see how it goes. But I think with the audio, it was like listening back to one of your school plays, isn't it? And just the cringe you were feeling, and it's just like it was horrible to listen to. I was in the car, and as I pulled over and listened to it, I was like, it's absolutely mind bending. It's like it's inexcusable. And I think with referees and football, it's different to any walk of life. We know that, and we say that every week. But these sorts of mistakes don't go punished, or they go unpunished. Sorry, and it's just only people. The only thing that suffers is the people and the clubs who are on the receiving end of it. And I think, as we said, there's a mistake every week. And even on the Sunday, I think the Nottingham Forest goalkeeper, he took out the striker as he got closed down. It's just, it doesn't seem to be getting anywhere, and it doesn't seem to be any sort of resolution soon. And it's always promises, and it's always something coming out on the Monday where it's good for Howard Webb, and he can all sit there and he can be like, oh yeah, we've done this. It's a good output. But I just don't know. Just to refer back to the old John Coleman thing, you fall out of love with football a bit, aren't you? Each time this comes through, and it's just, I'm starting to lose track of what's going on with it.
Well, it's customary now for me when Liverpool score to just wait, because you never know. And that was the one occasion when I jumped up and was bouncing around hugging the kids, and then got called back. I went, there's no way that was offside. And when you listen to the audio, I don't know whether any of you are familiar with it, but when you listen to the audio, and everyone listening on this podcast, the only sound that was missing off that audio, the transcript, was Leroy Jenkins. I don't know whether you're familiar with this, with the classic Leroy Jenkins running into the castle. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just YouTube it. It's very, very funny, but it's a lot of online gamers waiting to storm a castle, and then one of the guys playing on the line just runs in and gets them all killed. But it's very, very funny. That's the only thing you missed. All right, look, we'll move aside from that, because it just sort of riles me up. And but I liked your analogy, Stephen, of chucking a hand grenade into a room full of referees. That's what you said, wasn't it?
Definitely not.
No, definitely not. Anyway, let's talk about last night's game. Liverpool comfortable in the Europa League. Union Saint-Gilloise, or whatever you want to pronounce them, were the latest to come to Anfield. A huge game for a club like this, Ed. We saw the footage of them dancing up and down when they got the draw. Of course, we had Kevin McAllister playing it. For them, brother of our very own McAllister, Alexis McAllister. It was a funny game, wasn't it? Liverpool are one of them teams, aren't they, sometimes when the quality of the opposition tends to determine how we end up playing. And it was a stuttering kind of un-Liverpool performance, wasn't it? You know, they were pressed and they didn't really deal with it very well. And it wasn't the easiest night's football, let's be honest, was it, in the end? By the result it was, but it was a tough game.
Poetry in Motion on the Blood Red Channel.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, no, I don't think I'd have described it as a comfortable game, but I think still Liverpool never really got out of second gear, which is why I think it was a little bit uncomfortable at times, but I don't think they really needed to. I mean, about the most surprising thing I saw all night was finding out that Kevin McAllister, great name, by the way, I'm not sure when we play him again, but hopefully it is in December, because the amount of Home Alone jokes on the timeline on Twitter will be phenomenal. But I think about the most surprising thing was finding out that he's a 5'7" centre half, and he actually played quite well here. I mean, he played better than the last small centre half to come to Anfield, who obviously got turned inside out by Mo Salah the Butcher. But we'll stray away from talking about Man United, although it would be fun to just laugh at them for half an hour. Liverpool, as I said, it didn't really have to get out of second gear. It wasn't a comfortable performance, but it was nice to see Ryan Gravenberch get a goal. Obviously, that shot from Trent, I mean, just the keeper's got to do better there, hasn't he? I mean, that's the sort of goal that you expect to see in a game where there's such a gulf in class between the two sides. You know, you're not going to see Alisson or even probably Kelleher making a mistake like that. And Gravenberch was there, and I thought he was lively all night. So obviously lively in the box and managed to get his first Liverpool goal. So that was a nice moment for him and a nice moment for everyone. I think he's settled in quite well. I think he's probably reaping the benefits of having not gone away on that international break with the Netherlands. I know Ronald Koeman wasn't too happy about that. And there's an international break coming up pretty soon. So we'll see if he does end up going with the Netherlands on that one. But yeah, I think he's settled in really well. He was probably the big positive on the night. Obviously managed to get Salah, Nunes, the likes of them off, and hopefully they'll be fit and ready for Brighton at the weekend. No real injury issues for them. I think Nunes' miss, that was a bad one, wasn't it? I mean, if we're going to look for any negatives from the game, that wasn't really great, and he didn't stay on long enough to get any more of his chances that would have come and probably a customary goal as well. But I mean, Diogo Jota just getting a goal again, I mean, he's just got an ability. He brings something unique that I think none of our other attackers have when it comes to being in the box and just managing to get a shot away. You know, he manages to sort of get himself across that defender and get that left-footed shot away into the bottom corner. And once he got sort of a yard to shoot, I don't think anybody doubted that was going to be the result. And that obviously sealed the game for Liverpool. But yeah, like I say, not a comfortable one, but it didn't feel like one where Liverpool really needed to kick up into third, fourth, fifth gear even in order to get the result on the night.
Yeah, they have their ability, Stephen, don't they, Liverpool, to just sort of draw themselves back to the level that they're playing at sometimes. And you know, Union's, you just call them Union. They had the moments, didn't they? They had the chances. They had a header that flashed over the bar. It was a clear cut header. And obviously, Klopp made a lot of changes again, and I thought Kwanzaa at the back did very, very well. He's a very strong lad, very fast lad. But Gravenberch was the standout, I think, for me. When he was skillful, he was fast. He knows he feels like his natural thing is to go forward, doesn't it? His first touch is forward, and a very positive player. Harvey Elliott was very, very good as well. But Endo, I think, was quite solid, and the feelings possibly that he might have played his way into the midfield against Brighton at the weekend. It's going to be on Sunday. It's going to be a big game. It's going to be a tough game. Brighton are a great side, although capitulated recently, but still a good side. But you feel like McAllister still, I mean, it'd probably be as Loberslaw, McAllister and Endo midfield, but you just feel like one of them needs to do some defensive midfield work. And McAllister still, I mean, he gave a ball last night away that luckily the player ran onto and Alisson saved, but he just seems to be a little bit getting caught in possession, doesn't he? And still needs to find his feet, McAllister. But Endo's solid enough, does the easy things well.
Yeah, it's what you ask for from your defensive midfielder, isn't it? I don't think you want them to be doing half turns and all sorts of Maradona spins in the middle of the pitch. You want them to do the bread and butter, play the ball. And I think with what Klopp's asked of Endo, it's completely different to what he's used to at like Stuttgart and his previous clubs. He wants them to play further forward and sort of be that more progressive defensive midfielder that stops the attack rather than has to weather them when they're coming towards him. But just on the air, obviously, the game with Union, I think Liverpool, it is becoming a worry, the fact that Liverpool seemed to drop down a level. That was a good point you made there, Neil. It's just like, it felt like one of them FA Cup third round games, didn't it? Where it's like team, like having Waterloo, for example, where they take the lead, whatever. But I think Liverpool were lucky and he sort of rode the luck at times, because I think Alisson even nearly had a howler when he punched it into his own net almost and Quanta clear. But it's wake-up signs for Liverpool, and I think it's them sort of performances that you don't want to make a catalogue of, especially when you go into a series of games like Brighton, where it's a team who are very much resurgent now. I think they've done well to come back against Marseille. And the midfield, I think McAllister maybe does need some time out of squad, because he has been sort of thrown in the deep end and plunged in a bit, where he's been asked to do a role he's not necessarily comfortable with. And he might just sort of be in that in between, should I stay, should I go? And it might be sort of playing on his mind a bit, especially with the amount of minutes he's played. I don't think he expected to come in at least to learn a new role. And I think it might be a good game for Endo to come in and have a go at, because I think Brighton, we've seen, especially last season when they turned Liverpool over twice, that they have them midfield runners and you need someone more defensively minded to sort of weather that and stop it at its source.
Yeah, and it's going to be a type of game, think Ed, isn't it, with Brighton? I mean, West Ham did them by countering them, but Brighton are on the attacking side. They're a fast side down the flanks, and they're certainly going to be having a go at Liverpool. You know, just a minor concern. I mean, Alisson's, you know, we're blessed to have a keeper like Alisson. He's an incredible goalkeeper, probably the world, best goalkeeper in the world. But he doesn't perform very well under pressure, does he? I mean, time and time again, he does this ball knocking around the back line and then just mishits it or gives possession away. That's something we're going to have to look out for, I think, at the weekend, because Brighton will try and push and press Liverpool as much as possible. I think he just needs to cater for that fact that if there is any kind of slight chink in the armour for Alisson, it's that ability to sort of come under a little bit of pressure with the ball at his feet and give away possession. He did it a couple of times last night, and when you didn't really think the Union were going to provide that much pressure, but he still sort of succumbed to it. So got to be careful of that, haven't we? Got to be careful of the playing at the back. It's not one of his strong suits, I don't think.
Poetry in Motion on the Blood Red Channel.
Yeah, I think that's probably the one thing Ederson is better than him at. I think who gets picked for Brazil, I think it used to be Alisson more often than not. I think it might be Ederson who's getting picked ahead of him at the moment. Maybe that probably just depends on what the coach wants from his goalkeeper in any given game. You know, if he thinks his goalkeeper is going to be pressed, then he's probably going to go for Ederson. But I mean, obviously, Alisson, he's still great with his feet. You know, you think of those assists to Salah against United and against City, obviously the one where Salah spins João Cancelo. I think it's just become part of modern football, hasn't it, really? Those heart-in-mouth moments with your goalkeeper. I mean, every top club wants a goalkeeper who can play out from the back, who can play like these ridiculous passes. Everyone wants a goalkeeper who can come out and play in midfield in all their training sessions, things like that. You know, you see clips of Ederson doing that quite often. I mean, yeah, I think I don't like it personally. I mean, I was a keeper for a bit when I was younger, and my first thought was just to clear my lines every time the ball came anywhere near me. I did not want any of my defenders passing the ball back to me. That was a point my coach was quite keen for me to improve on. But yeah, it just goes against all the instincts that you've sort of been brought up on watching football, watching your keeper take all these chances. And look, at it, like I say, it's part of modern football. They're going to get caught out every once in a while. Alisson maybe is a little bit more vulnerable than some, but I think he more than makes up for it in everything else that he does. I mean, I'm on the record on just about every podcast I've been on this channel. I think he's the best goalkeeper in the world by an absolute mile. I think he's phenomenal. I mean, I don't think there's any team in the world, bar maybe Manchester City, who, do you know what, Real Madrid, to be fair, because Courtois had an unbelievable game in that Champions League final against us, didn't he? He is a really good keeper, but obviously, I mean, he's out with an ACL for this season, so Real Madrid will put them on the list as well. I don't think there's any clubs in the world who wouldn't take our keeper, barring, like I say, maybe Man City because of what Edison does for their system. But yeah, I think the risks, it's just part of the game. It's part of. Every fan's gonna have a keeper who's gonna have some heart in mouth moments at some point throughout the season. I think that's just part of playing in the Premier League now. And yeah, I think ours is better equipped to handle it than most.
And he plays the guitar as well. He's bossing. He's just the all round package, isn't he? He really is. It's just you have them moments where you go, just clear the ball. I mean, I think Stephen last night, Union sort of got their tactics wrong, didn't he? Because they had a 6'5" striker up front there, and he just should have been thumping balls up, but he didn't want to. He wanted to try and play out. And at times, as I say, quite an impressive team. Last third touch was lacking a little bit, and Diogo Jota proved just what the difference a team can have in a player with the ability to just be able to finish a ball off. I mean, how it got there doesn't really matter. A bit of a pinball machine, but the moment he gets that ball, and that he's so strong, isn't he, for a small player, small in stature. But he's strong as an ox, and that defender was getting nowhere near him, and he looks up and picks that spot. He's an absolute world, isn't he, to have up front?
Yeah, no, I think you don't. It's one of them players that you don't really realise what you've got until he's gone. I think the goals he comes up with, you wonder how he comes up with them, and I think he's a bit like one of those players who can have maybe 3 or 4 touches in the game, go unnoticed, and turns up with a goal. And I think I speak for most people. You say you'd have them strikers in your team 9 times out of 10. And I think the way he takes the goal as well, it's just an expert finish. I think someone mentioned it on the analysis where he just hits it into the floor and it's just enough to go over the keeper's foot. And I just think he offers that different sort of output whereas Nunes is missing those easy chances, but he's also scoring them hard ones as well. And he offers a different package to Nunes. And I think it's just two polar opposites of the two players you can get with. One's chaos and one's just composed and cool. And he wins the headers as well. I've noticed that he scores a lot more headers than he should do for a player of his size and stature. And I think Liverpool maybe were laughed at when he brought in a player from Wolves who just got promoted from the Championship, I think, or around there or thereabouts. And I think he's sort of showing each and every time he's worth every penny Liverpool have paid for him.
Yeah, indeed. And Pedro Neto is another one. They've got another worldie there. They haven't any bad luck. He's an incredible player. Of course, at the weekend, Ed, there isn't really any headaches up front, is there? Because we've got Gakpo injured and we've got Jota suspended. So it is looking like it's going to be the front three of Nunez, Salah and Diaz. Diaz came on last night, obviously. A few little bits and bobs. I mean, he's world-class himself, isn't he? But as big game as it's going to be, sort of, I think you would imagine that Nunes has done enough so far to stay in it. It was an absolute howler last night. We know that, but it's just the energy he provides, isn't it? The outlets he provides, and the pace he provides, just seems to go through the Liverpool team, doesn't it? And he's just so dangerous. He's very unpredictable. We know that. The rough diamond is still rough. We're still waiting to smooth it off a little bit, but enough in it last night to think that he'd obviously there aren't any choices, but do you think without the Jota suspension, he might have been in ahead of him, or do you think he's done enough to stick around in the front?
Yeah, I think it's probably the first time this season I actually fancy my chances at guessing what Liverpool's front three is going to look like for a Premier League game. But yeah, I would have been picking Nunes anyway. Personally, I think that's where Jurgen Klopp's head is at, going off what he's done so far this season as well. Nunes has got the nod over over Jota in those Premier League games more often than not. Obviously, Jota did in that game against Spurs. I mean, that one last night was a real bad one. But there's no doubt in my mind that if he'd stayed on for that second half, he would have got himself a goal at some point. He's just such a chance magnet. He's been that way ever since he came. That's not changed at all. The only thing that's changed is the bad misses are much more, I think, fewer and far between than they were at this point last season. Certainly, I do think every issue he's having all comes back to me for that headbutt on Joachim Andersen against Crystal Palace, right when he was needing to sort of bed into the team and let everyone get used to him. That 3-game suspension, I think, really hurt him. I think he is still paying the price for that in terms of his development, the way he fits in the squad. But I do really think we've seen a big change in him this season. I maybe wasn't convinced at the end of last season. I certainly wasn't convinced at the end of pre-season for this season that he'd be the man up top for Liverpool this season. I thought Gakpo would be the one through the middle, but I know he's injured now. But he's not really solidified a place in that front three anywhere near as much as Nunes has. And like you say, Fitzy, I think Nunes has probably done enough to be getting the nod against Brighton anyway. Like you say, the chaos that he brings, the pace. I just come back to, if you were a centre back, you would not want to play against him. I know I'd rather play against Jota. All right, Jota's much more likely to get a bit of space and a favourable bounce in the box, maybe, and he does get his goal more often than not. But Nunes would just be such a nightmare to deal with. He really would. You know, it doesn't seem like he can get under his skin anymore and wind him up, which was obviously an issue with that headbutt and was a bit of a concern early on, but doesn't really seem to be a factor anymore. People aren't really targeting him for that. And yeah, hopefully, well, I would imagine he will be starting against Brighton and hopefully manages to get himself another goal or two.
Definitely. And Stephen Gravenberch has got to be in the mix somewhere, hasn't he? I mean, off the bench, or if we were looking for any kind of replacement for Roberto Firmino, not that he can be replaced, but Gakpo obviously is a great player for doing that. But Gravenberch seems very much in the style of Gakpo, and he's very leggy and does nice little mazy runs. He's got a lot of skill to him as well, some nice little deft touches. So you can see him, you can see him featuring at some point of the weekend, can't you?
Yeah, I think so. It's just a matter of when he does. I think what we've seen yesterday with Gakpo, Gravenberch, sorry, he's got that silk, and he's got that bit of style as well, a bit of swag, and he's, you see him after the game, he's loving life at Liverpool, and I don't think you'll see a much smileier interview with TNT Sport than that. I just think Jürgen Klopp's got a player who not worships him, but he's got a player who really appreciates what he's done for his career so far, and obviously, but he's only been here just over a month or two now, and he seems to be bedding in, is obviously going to be that transition period, but he said he just needs minutes, and I think the free match ban for Curtis Jones, although it's a difficult one for him, and for a player who was sort of grown into the room to have a suspension like that's difficult, but it's his opportunity now, and it looks like he's going to take it, and I think goals like that and goal involvements are going to do him the world of good. And I think if I could put myself in Jürgen Klopp's shoes with all my coaching badges, which are non-existent, as much as a back of a cardboard box on the cereal, but I just think he probably put him in later in the game where you do have a lead and Brighton are chasing, he's got that legs and he's got that, just got that raw power pushing forward. And just to touch back on Nunes, I think he sort of adds that aura through the team, doesn't he? Where defenders are going to be scared and going, I can't really bother watching him today. I pass him over to my defensive partner, and with Brighton, you've got three of them. So I think it's a match made for both Gravenberch and Nunes. But I think with the midfield that with Liverpool have got so far, I think it probably just is one start too soon for Gravenberch.
Poetry in Motion on the Blood Red Channel.
Yeah, that brings us to the back, Ed, and it's a dilemma again, isn't it? We're back to the Trent dilemma thing, aren't we? Trent played reasonably well last night, captain the side, which is always great. I do feel sometimes like he just trots back. He doesn't feel to me like he has that urgency to try and cover his position. Joe Gomez came on for him, didn't he, last night? And that's probably a bit more of a solid right back, defensively wise, although he does tend to make a couple of mistakes as well, Gomez. Kwanzaa's one for the future, definitely, but Konate was solid again last night, wasn't he? And I mean, even Tomiskus I thought played very well, did his part. But with Robertson, and it's got to be Konate and Van Dijk, hasn't it? But it's just what he does again with the right back position. Is it's what he does with whether he starts with Gomez or whether he starts with, and now obviously getting back up to the pace of the game, to Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah, it's an interesting decision, really. I don't think anybody would have predicted at the start of this season that this will be a predicament Jurgen Klopp would have particularly. But Joe Gomez has been really, really, really good this season when he's played at right back. I think Liverpool have looked better defensively when he's been part of that defensive unit at right back. Obviously, I think against Wolves, when they sort of had him trying to play the inverted Trent role, that didn't really work. But I think if you're just looking for somebody to play as a normal right back, who will get forward occasionally, put the odd okay ball in, I don't think you can do that much better than Joe Gomez this season. He's done really well. But for me, if Trent feels, I mean, obviously he played about an hour, 70 odd minutes last night. He's got back up to fitness. If he feels fit and ready, I don't see how you can't start him. I mean, I've not fallen out of love with this new system where he plays in that inverted fullback role yet. I still think when he plays there, there's no other player in the squad that can play that role like him. And I think if Jurgen Klopp is sold on that system and that's the one that he wants to be playing as his option A, then obviously we will see Trent starting and we'll see him playing that role, because when Trent Alexander-Arnold isn't available, you can't really do it. Obviously, we saw Bajcetic attempt it against Lask, and he had an all right game. I'd maybe be interested in seeing him play there again at some point in one of the cup competitions again. But yeah, for me, Trent Alexander-Arnold's got to start. They've got to play that system and they've got to get him on the ball as much as they possibly can, because he's just such a unique talent. And I think last night, maybe you're right, Fitzy, on that point of it, sometimes not tracking back, not covering defensively as much. But I think especially last night, I don't really think there were too many points when he felt pressured to do that. I think he felt Konate and Quanta had everything covered, and they did for pretty much all of the night. I think you'd see a bit more urgency if Trent Alexander-Arnold is starting in that role on Sunday, and I expect he will be, and I hope that he has another great game and manages to pick up an assist or two, and maybe a goal. That shot last night that obviously led to Gravenberch's goal, I was hoping that one was going to fly into the top corner, to be fair, because I do think he should score more for how good of a ball striker he is and the positions he gets into. I do think he needs to add a few more goals to his game. But yeah, hopefully he can maybe get one on Sunday.
Yeah, and he did space some absolutely bang-on passes last night, didn't he? Chipped one over the top there for Salah that just bounced and span on, didn't it? And gave the goalie a chance to catch it. But an incredible player, Stephen. I think it's just, for me, it's about developing a system that when he is getting forward, the we've done it before where Konate moved across and covered his space, and they just move across and cover that, just so there isn't a whole pocket there for opposing strikers to run into when because like it or not, he doesn't spin back, Trent. He is at the moment just he sort of jogs his way back from midfield, and if he's going to do that, but we're going to lose a lot of quality if we don't play him, then it just has to be worked out that someone else picks up the slack, Stephen, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think with that being said, there's a lot of lessons to learn from Brighton last season, where I think it's going to be the same this time around, where they're not going to look to go toe-to-toe with Liverpool, you know. Let them try, and they need to win more than we do, type of thing. And they're going to be looking to sort of hit Liverpool on the counter. And I think Trent's becoming one of them luxury players now, which you don't get at fullback. You don't get anywhere else apart from your strikers. Liverpool need to work towards his strengths, and his strengths obviously the creativity aspect. And if he does need to go forward, it's more beneficial to Liverpool. But then they need to be aware of the threats going back. And I think it's going to be very much the case for Sunday, where they're going to have to just get people covering them, maybe where there's maybe two sitting midfielders, not formational wise, but somewhat they're going to have two people sitting in. And I think we saw with Marseille last night that Brighton are, or especially with Aston Villa at the weekend, they're not a team who don't chip goals. What is it now? It's 8-2 games. And obviously that's going to be playing on their minds, and Liverpool need to sort of capitalise on that. And I think what we've seen earlier in the season with Liverpool and the free scoring nature, it's certainly there to be snatched upon. And I think when it comes down to the sort of defensive aspect, they do need to actually, just to completely go off track on that, there is an element of revenge from last season as well. They've got knocked out of the defence of the FA Cup and they got absolutely embarrassed on one of the Torres away trips at the Amex. So I think it's going to be an extra sense of motivation for Liverpool. And I think using that, especially with Van Dijk and now Alexander-Arnold, both captain and vice-captain, I think they're going to be looking to charge from the front and definitely lead from it as well.
Yeah, we're talking about that one last season. I mean, you feel like you're dealing with a different Liverpool now, Ed, aren't you? I mean, look, Sunday was a catastrophe. The Spurs game, sorry, was an absolute catastrophe on Saturday. But what you have to remember is we were down to 9 men for most of that game and still staved them off. They weren't ever going to score. It didn't look like it was a phenomenal digging in performance, wasn't it? And 12 against 9, you could call it, couldn't you? So we have to take the positives from that. And this is a different team now, surely, isn't it? It's a different squad. It's a different team that went to Brighton and got humbled. And you'd like to think that we have a Liverpool team that we can put out there now that's going to put up much better display against these teams.
Yeah, I think in the last few weeks, I've been a bit hesitant to sort of say that. But I think we've seen one too many, you know, spirit-building performances, you know, where Liverpool have showcased the amount of fight they've got in this new squad that, you know, I do think this Liverpool 2.0 have proven that they've got certainly the team spirit to go on and challenge City for a title, whether that be this season, maybe more realistically a bit next season. But it's whether they've got the quality and whether the quality players can stay fit now. For me, I think in these past few weeks we've seen so many performances where we've gone down to 10, obviously against Spurs, went down to 9, and there is no doubt in my mind that down to 10 men, if that Luis Diaz goal stands and we go 1-0 up, we win that game. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever. Spurs are Spurs. It was, I can't remember if it was 16 or 17 we were unbeaten against them. You know, they have been our whipping boys in recent years. That's a fact. Every year Liverpool have done something notable, you know, won a trophy or two. Part of that season has been hammering Spurs, whether that be home or away. It's a fixture of a good Liverpool season, and it should have happened. It should have happened again this past week. I mean, that should have been a fixture that we'll point to at the end of the season and go, that's a moment where Liverpool proved they were title contenders, maybe even title winners. You know, we'll see. And I think, I don't want to come back to that VAR and the offside thing, but I think one of the main reasons it's so frustrating, beyond the fact it's just such an unprecedented and ridiculous error, is that we know that come the end of the season, rather than pointing to it as a result that showed our spirit and showed we're maybe title winners, we know we could all be looking back at that and going, we just lost the title to City by a point again. Look at it. It's another Rodri handball. It's another Sterling offside in 13, 14 when he was playing for Liverpool. You know, there's one too many of these moments you can point to and be like, you know, Liverpool should have at least one extra Premier League. And part of me, obviously, I want us to push City all the way. And I do think we are capable of that this season. But part of me does think, you know, if we get to that stage and we beat Wolves, I know we're not playing Wolves at home last game of the season, but it always seems like we do when we're going up against City. If we beat whoever we're playing at Anfield last game of the season and we end up losing by a point, everyone's first reaction is going to be that Diaz goal. And people will be rightly furious about it. I mean, the fury is obviously going to die down in these next few weeks, but everyone's been kicking off about it, rightly so. And I just hope that, obviously, we don't want to forget about it. Changes have to be made. I just hope that we're not talking about this again come the end of the season, because that would just be so bitterly disappointing with, like I say, the fighting spirit Liverpool have showed so far this season. I don't think it's going too soon now to say that. I don't want to say Liverpool are back and they are going to push City all the way right to the last game, but I do think Liverpool will comfortably be the best of the rest at least this season.
Let's hope so, mate. And it does come to a point when we lose the season, you won't be able to buy a hand grenade anyway. Stephen, let's have a quick prediction of the scores. Of course, we've got Brighton on Sunday. It's a 2 o'clock kickoff. And then just a little matter on the 21st of October of because we've got international duty. 21st of October is the derby at Anfield. So first and foremost, Brighton away, tough side, a very, very good side, well managed, and we're tough and for us last season. So what's your predictions quickly, Stephen, for this for this game on Sunday?
I think we've found in recent weeks, haven't we, that Liverpool have been facing these other challenges and they've overcome them. So I think with Brighton in mind, I think it's just going to be another 3-1 win.
Okay, sir. What about you, Ed?
I have to say, as positive as I've been about this Liverpool team, I do really like Brighton. And going away to the Amex, obviously, it was a difficult one last season. I think we'll draw, so I'm going to go 2-2.
Okay, I'll go for a 2-1 victory for Liverpool and, more importantly, trying to finish the game with 11 men on the pitch. That'll be a start, wouldn't it? Ed, thank you very much. Ed McKay, appreciate it, mate. Stephen Killen, thank you very much. That was another poetry in motion. The Reds keep marching on. Some things are out of our control, but we are definitely a better-looking team than we have been in recent seasons, and we are pushing, and we will be there or thereabouts. I'll see you on the next poetry in motion. But for now, thank you to Ed Kay and Stephen Killen, and we'll see you all again soon. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Poetry in Motion from the Liverpool Echo's Blood Red Channel.